Hey everybody, Spencer here. I just wanted to let everybody know that there was a little bit of an audio issue in the beginning of this podcast. We did get it resolved before the end, but I just wanted to give everybody a heads up, let you know that it does get resolved, and we're sorry for the inconvenience. Thank you so much for listening this week. It was really fun to talk about the Pro Tour and have Mason on the show this week. We look forward to seeing you guys all again next week.
Oh, you want me to host? Oh, I forgot that. This is awkward. It's all on here. It's all live. I was like, does Spencer not know we're already live? Well, hello, everyone. And welcome to a awkward live edition of the Constructive Criticism. It wouldn't be awkward if I was here, but I am. So it is. I'm joined by Silver Pro, Michael Handrock. Don't look away. Michael, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah? Good.
Good. Now that I know what's happening.
Now that you know, I said
a little confused before.
Well, we were going live, and I forgot that Spencer wanted me to take over the hosting role this episode, and so I was waiting for him to do his normal thing, and then he didn't do it, and now we're here. And then Spencer, how you feeling, buddy? You've been sick the last couple days. You feeling better?
Yeah. Yes, I am.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yes, much better.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Glad to have you on the show. Originally, I was going to take over the hosting role for Spencer since he was sick, but he felt good enough to come on, so we're just doing a three-man show this week. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Do you mind turning Michael and Spencer up, though, Mason?
I can definitely turn them up real quick. Sure.
Cool.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, while I'm turning them up, this is a good time to bring up someone that will never turn you down, and that's Oasis Games. Oasis Games is the proud spot.
That was
good. Oasis Games.
For that one?
No, I just kind of went with my gut. My gut said to do that. So I've turned them up as loud as I probably can.
That's better than mine. That's what I'm learning.
Yeah. But Oasis Games has all the best card quality and cards in stock. Whenever I need a card, I go to Oasis Games, and 99% of the time they have it, unless it's Sacred Cats. Then that is always bought out for some reason. But Oasis Games, it's a great place to stop.
That's mostly Mason's fault.
Oh, I mean, well, it's because I'm always going to buy them. I'm the only one. So I check and you guys haven't restocked because you're like, oh, we have to mail these dollar cards to this guy. It's absurd. But if you want to get cards from somewhere else, like maybe some packs that Oasis doesn't offer.
Hey, Mason, turn yourself down a little bit.
Wow, okay. So now I'm turned myself down. I had to turn up the volume of the computer. So,
well, if you make us both talk at once, technically you'll be able to see it on OBS where our sounds line up, but the chat is the one saying this.
Okay, well, I turned myself down. I've turned you guys up all the way. You're as high as you can go without piercing my ears. So, yeah. But you know what else pierces my ears? To hear that Nikachu's beat me again. And I'm sad to report that's not true. I beat Nikachu 2-1. 2-1. I'm up. I'm up a game.
Mason.
Yes.
Mason, are you lying?
No, I'm not lying. I know, to be fair, I was playing on a friend's account. It wasn't my account. But he has been he was bested. So I don't know if that counts. I don't know where that falls. I just know that I was involved in the game. And he has been beat. So, for now, that's what matters. Guys, let's move on to the point of the show, and that's hashtag always improving. Because we believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And Michael, you just got back from the Pro Tour. So what was your hashtag always improving moment?
I don't know. I mean, I had a pretty good result. Was happy with my play in general. Was happy with deck selection and, like, draft strategy and stuff. 10-6 is my best finish at a Pro Tour to date, and I'm proud of that. That was a good finish for me.
I'm good to hear that. I'm sorry you couldn't finish out X5, but I mean, cats are such a power. I mean, Sacred Cat's such a strong card that it was probably a mistake to not register it for the Pro Tour in the first place.
So. Yeah, I did lose to Cat It was like Cat Tribal, but secretly Pummeler in disguise.
Hmm. So the deck was playing like, was it, did it actually play Pummeler? Or just a bunch of pump spells?
It was just a bunch of double strike and trample stuff and pump spells.
Mm-hmm. And that was day two of the Pro Tour, correct?
Yeah, I think he finished 10-6 as well. He did not draw as well as he did against me in his last two matches and lost them both.
So. Mm. Gotcha. Well, that sucks.
But nothing like losing to a Ketra to, make you feel good about yourself and your life.
Yeah, I mean, there's such a standard all-star. That's what you hear on all the other podcasts, is them complaining about Oketra and the power level of it. So,
it felt broken as it was 35ing me on turn 5, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, chat's bringing up the old 65th place. That does suck for Michael there. But that's life. You know, sometimes you don't scoop to people in the last round of GPs, and then the next week you get 65th. That's just life, you know? It happens.
Sometimes people don't ask you to scoop to them in the round of a GP, and you know you don't know, and
yeah. Just deflecting the blame there. I see, Spencer. What was your hashtag?
100%.
Spencer, what was your hashtag always improving moment this week?
Just watching a lot of the Pro Tour and spending a lot of time with my wife. It's been nice. Winning a PPTQ the first week of the season means that I get to spend a lot of family time. You know, when we were driving to the GP, one of the people in my car, you know, asked me this, like, Spencer, how do you do a podcast and play PPTQs and go to GPs? Like, how do you have time for all this? And honestly, it's just like having an amazing wife. So when I have, you know, time that I can dedicate to her, like, it's going to go to her. And she was really cool about it. You know, I was really sick all day, so I got to watch the Pro Tour in bed, and, you know, she came up and checked on me. So, and then all the time that I wasn't in bed, I was spending with her.
Gotcha. That's awesome. Well, my hashtag always improving moment was just staying driven. I won my PBDQ for the season this past Saturday, and I had lost in the finals the last 2 weeks prior. So I lost in the finals each week, and it was just, you know, making sure to stay focused and driven and, you know, I lost the first round of the PBDQ too, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to lose the first round of this one. And then, you know, like, my friends are doing well. So like, if I lose, I'm still stuck there all day. But luckily I was able to win out. And then, everyone that I went up there with, except one person, made top 8, and then me and a friend met in the finals, and he did not want the invite. So he handed it to me. So it was nice to see the work it rewarded.
The best kind of finals win, the one you don't have to.
Yeah.
The one where you get to go home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For real.
It was nice. It was awesome. Well, no no Patreon question of the week this week, but we do want to give a shout-out to some of our newer patrons, and Zach H., Gavin B., and Bobby B. Thank you all so much for the Patreon support. It means a lot. The show will always be free, but we do appreciate the money so we can help put towards the show being better and help pay for Michael and Spencer's GPs and all of that nature to help put in the show.
I don't know if I told this story on the last show. So I'll tell it right now. So I met Gavin back at the modern GP in Portland years ago.
I think
we were playing it. Oh, did I tell the story already?
Yeah, and like, he was about to get a game loss, but you argued not for him to get the game loss.
Yes.
Yes.
Did I tell this on the show?
Yep, you did.
Well, I've been sick for 3 days.
It's fine. I remember thinking it was a good story. That's why I remembered it. But
cool. Well, before we, I just want to give a shout out to Gavin for supporting the show, because I hope that I can make that kind of impression on more people. It's pretty important to me. Before we go on to the next segment, we're going to take a quick technical break.
Okay, we'll be right back. All right, sorry about that. We think we figured out the audio issue for the show, so hopefully that's working better for everyone on Twitch. But normally this would be the part of the show where we do the power rankings. But with the Pro Tour being a mixed format, we don't normally do that. And it's the main thing we're going to be talking about the show anyway. So we're going to skip power rankings and just move right into talking about Pro Tour Ixalan, because really, that's the most exciting thing that happened in the past week when it comes to Magic the Gathering. So let's hop right into that, and let's talk about the top 8 decks. Michael, do you want to read the top 8 decks real quick?
Yeah, sorry. Give me one sec. So let's see. I'm just trying to find the link in the show notes for the for the top 8 versus the other ones. So we had Mike Sigrist with 4 color energy, Christian Hauk with Teamer energy, Pascal Maynard with white blue Godfrey's gift, Seth Manfield with Sultai energy, Guillaume Matignon with Jeskai approach, Peter Gwagowski with Four Color Energy, John Rolfe with Ramanap Red, Samuel Ehlenfeld with Mardu Vehicles, and it looks like that is all the top eight.
Awesome. So what do you think of the top eight, Spencer? I mean, it's a fairly diverse top eight.
Yeah, you know, when I look at Pro Tours, I actually don't usually put much stock into the top eight as much as I do the high-finishing decks. You know, I think that, when I look at this top eight, I see that you can do well, relatively well, with a lot of decks. The only one that really surprises me is Mardu. I feel like that mana is not great. We kind of talked about that last week on the show. But I think that Godfarer's Gift, there was a hole in the meta for that deck. Mono Red's really good. Four Color Energy's really good. And, you know, Jeskai Approach has a good matchup against, you know, the decks that you want to beat. So I'm not really surprised by the top eight. You know, when I look for a deck from a Pro Tour, I look at what has the best record. At this tournament, the best record at 27 points was Ramanap Red multiple times. Multiple, like, the most 9-1s came from Ramanap Red.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, I think that's definitely telling. I think that deck is very good and very consistent. And I mean, Mardu Vehicles did see the guy, Sam, I believe was his name. He snuck it on 0.01%. So it's very easily could not have had Mardu Vehicles in the top eight. And that is kind of why top eights are not always super indicative of what actually did great at the tournament. So, you know, when we're looking at these deck lists and looking at the day two metagame and everything, what impressed you the most, Michael, from like these decks and everything, the decks that were shown?
Well, I think that when you look at the deck list that did well, it's pretty clear that a lot of the decks were designed to prey on Teemer Energy, specifically on Teemer Energy's leaning a little bit harder on sort of narrow, awkward cards to win mirror matches. A lot of these Teemer Energy decks are a little bit light on removal compared to how they were built in the past. I think, like, Confiscation Coup and Vizier of Many Faces, those slots have to come from somewhere, and a lot of time they do come at the expense of removal spells. So when you look at, like, the Sultai Energy decks doing fairly well as a whole, I think that deck really preys on Teemer's lack of spot removal. I think that Mono Red has success for a lot of the same reasons. I think especially the builds with a lot of Rampaging Ferocidons are sort of leaning on the fact that Teemer doesn't have that many ways to actually kill that, especially when you start trimming Glorybringers, which a lot of these lists have. I think that the metagame shaped up really well for decks that sort of took advantage of Teemer's lack of spot removal.
Makes a lot of sense. Spencer, do you feel the same way when it comes to those kind of decks of the Pro Tour, or different vibes from you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clear when you look at something like Mono White Vampires, right? Like, why does that deck exist? Well, first of all, there's not a really a great way for Teemer, for a lot of the ways that people are building Teemer, to beat go wide decks, right? So when you think about something like Mono White Vampires, which is going wide in the most true of terms, right? Between, what is the legendary artifact called?
Well, Oketra's Monument and Maverin Fane, right?
Yes, thank you.
Those are sort of
there's three of the Maverin Fane and then four Monument in the deck, right? And you're going really, really wide, and you're punishing Teemer for the fact that it has a hard time beating those decks, right? Because, like, if I'm playing double one drop and you're playing Long Tusk Cub, but my one drops also make me guys later in the game, I don't care as much about losing those one drops to that cub that's back on blockers.
I think that's true, and I think that these decks sort of... Teemer is very good at fighting decks that are also trying to play about the same number of creatures without strong synergies between them. I think in general, that's one of the reasons that Teemer has at least done okay against Mardu. But when you look at, like, these Whining Constrictor decks, they really expose Teemer's lack of removal. And then, obviously, like, the Vampire deck or something more along those lines, you're really looking at trying to beat Teemer through... just playing creatures that you don't really... Like, if they only have four Harness Lightnings, they just are not going to... Something like Oketra's Monument can be a really big problem.
Yeah, you really clog up the ground and then just can't...
Right, so even though their creatures might be better, like, you know, Long Tusk Cub is obviously better than Dustborn Sky Marcher or Danto Vanguard or whatever, but if you can't kill something that's keeping them from going if you can't keep them from going really wide, it doesn't really matter that your creatures are better because they're just still going to get gummed up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that a lot. I think that, you know, one of the things that the Timber deck did really well in the past, right, is it like made a huge cub or a huge Hydra, but then it backed up those things with removals to stop you from with removal spells to stop you from going wide. When you cut back on the removal spells, all you have is these things in the way. And when you can go wide enough, you can eliminate that advantage.
Sure, and obviously I'm certainly not saying that I don't think Teemer is good. I'm not trying to say anything like that. I'm just saying that a lot of the things that people do to win the mirror specifically don't line up as well against the decks trying to go super wide or the decks trying to assemble various creature synergies. That's all.
Yeah. And that being said, three of the top eight decks were essentially Teemer energy decks. So.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, I'm more looking at, like, if we're looking at how these decks are exploitable in some way, these are things that you can understand as ways to beat them.
Yep. Yeah, that makes sense, too. Like, as the arms race, like, there's sort of an arms race between Teemer players to beat each other. As that keeps escalating, these strategies that are wider and lower to the ground will continue to get better.
Which is what you should expect from a healthy metagame.
Yeah, exactly. That the tools exist for different decks to be good, and it'll be somewhat cyclical.
Yep, and you'll see, even though we'll see a lot of Teemer energies at the format, the 9 flex spots they have will change up a lot week to week to week to week. Which is, I mean, what else can you really ask for in Standard? Like, it's not like green-white tokens, so. Yep.
That's very true.
All right, so let's move on and talk about some of the cards that impressed you most. So, Michael, what was the card that impressed you most from this past Pro Tour?
Well, so my perspective is a little bit different, given that obviously I was playing the games. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my focus is more on the decks I played with, obviously, but also against. I would say the two cards in my own deck that impressed me the most were Glintsleeve Siphoner, which was incredible, and Vraska's Contempt, which was perhaps even better.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So Vraska's Contempt is kind of like, so when it first was revealed, a lot of people thought it might be a too fair version of Hero's Downfall to actually see play. Is it just positioned well enough against Teemer and those kind of decks and Hazoret to see play, or what do you feel about that card?
It was really just generically good. I ended up playing three of them in my main deck, and sometimes wish I'd played a fourth. It was just outstanding. I killed a ton of Hazorets. I killed some Glorybringers, I got rid of a Chandra, I exiled Scrapheap Scroungers, Heart of Kirin's, like, there are just a bunch of things where specifically exiling them was really important. I exiled a bunch of Rampaging Ferocidons that I was struggling to block. You can exile an Earthshaker Kenra, and the life is really critical in the aggro matchups. This card was just really powerful.
Mm-hmm. Spencer, what card impressed you most from the Pro Tour?
Well, I messaged Quentin Pierce, former co-host of the show, right before the Pro Tour, and told him that I thought Vraska, the Relic Seeker, might be secretly the best card in Standard right now. And I think I'm right. I think that card might actually be everything.
Interesting. So Vraska was my pick also, but not because I secretly thought she was the best card in Standard. I was just very impressed when I saw her in play, because I'd seen some Teemer list player, and it made sense in like the Jabberwocky energy lists that wanted to be a bit more reactive for her. But seeing Channel Fireball come and all playing to Vraska's main deck was kind of a very big statement for the card, in my opinion.
Honestly, the card's just insane. Like, the more I play it, the more I'm like, I don't know how I missed so wide on this card and didn't realize how good it would be.
Yeah, so I won a game in the first match of Constructed where I missed blue for the entire game and just went, like, Glintsleeve into something, into, like, Gontia removal spell into Vraska, and then just plused it twice, Fatal Push two of his guys, emblemed, and killed him.
Yeah, the card just, literally has won me like more games of Standard in the last week than probably any other card.
I mean, it has issues, obviously, namely that if you're playing
it's six mana, right? So yeah,
it's not perfect.
Yeah, it's not Elspeth, right? Like, you can't just jam four of them and then be like.
That being said, it has its moments where you're just like, I don't really know how I'm supposed to beat this.
Yeah,
it's really powerful.
The fact that it also takes up to 8 loyalty is such It's like, even if you can attack into it, you normally won't die, and they can just trade in to kill one of your things and get a treasure. So.
Yeah, I mean, I had a couple of times where my opponent like had a Glorybringer or a Hazoret that was able to attack it, and you're just like, okay, plus it again.
A card that also impressed me quite a bit from Danny that he was playing, and I think that the Vampire's decks are also playing these, was Ixalan's Binding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that card's shown some serious work. It's very good against like the against teamer decks and against the token decks, too.
Yeah, I don't know how we ended up, like, here's a real scary thing for me, like, as a person who consumes and creates Magic content and plays a ton of Magic, right? Is that if Wizards is going to be able to make 4-mana removal spells, like Vraska's Contempt and Ixalan's Binding, that we are willing to play, they're not going to make them cheaper anymore. Like, that will become the standard of these style of effects, because we still are playing them. Like, they have to push the envelope in so many directions, right? And, like, right now they're being like, well, are you willing to play this? And we're like, yep.
Yeah, and also...
Ixalan's Binding in particular, though, is very unusual. It's a 4-mana removal spell, but sometimes it's also secretly, like, a Cabal Therapy.
Yeah.
You know, it just, like, Danny was playing, I think, against BBD, and he... Ixalan's Binding a Glorybringer, BBD has Glorybringer as the last card in his hand, and then top decks Glorybringer, and just loses. It's like, well, that was awkward.
Did he say easy BBGG?
No. But, I mean, probably.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just like, so, and kind of like that, like when your opponent plays a Scarab God, and you are just like, well, Vraska's Contempt that. Right? Sure. Like, there are just these... Although they're awkward in that, you know, costing 4 mana is a big cost, both those cards are sort of uniquely powerful in ways that even a card like Hero's Downfall just wouldn't be.
Yeah, it's interesting, because the fact that it's Exile, it really is the most important part, because the gods are really taxing. Like, they demand to be answered in that sort
of way. Yeah, and Binding just randomly will win you games. You just play it, and sometimes it's just, like, a lot better than you thought it was going to be.
That's very true. And in the mirror, in the token mirror specifically, like, being able to hit their Noria Procession is normally game over.
Yeah, we were trying to figure out, so you have to, like, binding their procession, then they cast out your binding, then you binding their cast out, and then you
win.
Use your binding that you get back on their procession or their stockpile, whichever they're missing, and then the game's over.
Well, unless they have a binding.
Right. No, this is when we were considering binding as a card that no one else was playing.
Oh, okay.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I mean, Lost Sense is also good in that mirror.
The play patterns are strange, but Binding is...
Well, it makes you have to split them too, right?
Yeah, Danny was loving Ixalan's Binding, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait to do the interview with Danny and talk to him about that. I'm very excited now. Little eye roll there, I see. Well,
yeah.
What was the biggest surprise when it comes to decks for you, Spencer?
Oh, man. The Mono White Vampires deck. Like, let's be 100% clear. If you told me that a deck with 4 Legion Conquistador would have 8 wins in Constructed at the Pro Tour, I would have bet you any amount of money.
Did you ever play with Squadron Hawk? It's like the same card, man.
I feel like it's cheating when you're playing. It's an Oketra's Monument deck, right?
Like, it doesn't matter. You could have bet me any amount. I would have been like, snap it off, ship the bunnies.
Sure.
Yeah. Would you not?
I mean, no. I'm not saying I thought that Legion Conquistador was going to be good.
It's going to be a 4 of.
Well, if you're going to play 1, you're probably playing 4.
Yeah, I like how you're like, that card that searches itself, it's a 4 of, Mason. Like, 4 of, not saying, a 3 like, of, not a 2 of, not a 1 of.
I mean, how many like, would you play? Well, if not 4?
Spencer, I want you to know, if someone told me they played a 1 of Legion Conquistador deck, I'd be surprised.
Well, obviously, but what I'm saying is like, there was a point in playtesting where they were like, we don't need 3, because it doesn't search for all of them like Squadron Hawk. It searches for 1 at a time.
No, it searches for all of them.
It searches for all of them. He is Vampire Hawk.
It searches for any
number.
Oh, man.
I definitely have played that card wrong in Limited.
Oh, man. Well, hashtag always improving. It's the point of the podcast. Now you know.
That makes so much more sense now. I was like, do you really want the 4th one? Like, I feel like 3 is definitely enough. All right, that makes way more sense.
Oh, man. That was great. I'm glad we had that moment.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad that it was live for the whole world to see too.
Yep. And saved in audio form forever. No, I mean, but you're right. That is like the most, probably that and like the Team of Riddle form had the most talk on social media and all that kind of stuff.
No, I mean,
I didn't even see that deck.
Well, that's because you were winning, Michael.
Yeah.
Well, I think that if I wasn't going to talk about that deck, though, I mean, I've tried to make Drakehaven happen a lot, guys. Like, a lot.
Oh, yeah, and the blue-white cycle deck? Is that what you're talking about?
And this guy made it happen like it was nothing.
Yeah, I wish I pulled that deck up on stream so we could actually look at it and talk about it. But in case you know, there was a blue-white cycling deck that got 8 wins in the Constructed round of the Pro Tour, which are the rounds that matter the most when you're looking at decks to play in the future. So it seems very interesting. Michael, have you got to see this at all? It looks like you're looking
for
it.
Yeah, I've seen that one. It looked kind of bad.
Yeah.
Like,
wait, you're telling me the Renewed Faith deck times 4 doesn't look great?
No. I mean, you know, do what you want with your life, but that's not what I'm doing with mine.
You 2 mana, gain 2 life, draw a card, bro.
Sometimes you gain 6 life, too. It's modal. It's like a charm.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, the deck that maybe was most surprising to me and maybe most a deck that I want to maybe look at something similar to going forward, there were some, I think some of the card hoarder guys played like Winding Constrictor Energy. So they just weren't playing like Servants, basically. They were like Long Tusk Cub, Rogue Refiner, Whirler, Harness Lightning.
Spencer's like hand palming.
I'm looking at this vampire list again, and it's just, he's playing 4 Glory Bound Initiates in his sideboard and 4 Legion Conquistadors in his main deck. Like,
yeah, we don't need that garbage. We don't need garbage Glory Bound Initiate. That guy sucks.
That's a 3/1. It dies to everything.
Legion Conquistador for life.
Well, what if they play Blazing Volley to beat the mono red decks and stuff like that, and then you just get caught with your pants down, not with Legion Conquistador.
The mono red decks, yeah, I have no
idea. Wasn't there a version of the mono white deck that wasn't vampires that was playing the enchantment that buffs your guys and gives them vigilance for the turn?
Trial. Yeah, there was. I don't know where it is though on these lists.
Was it playing Cartouche also?
I'm sure it was. If it was playing Trial.
I think Hubbard said they wasn't. That seems
like the sweetness.
Yeah. I mean, I can see you get Trial, Cartouche, Trial, and just win.
Yeah, it's not nothing.
The problem is that I don't know that you have enough mana, so.
I mean, that's only 5 mana, right? No, Trial's 3. Never mind. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's 3 mana.
Sorry.
Yeah, chat is saying that it wasn't playing Cartouche. But that does seem quite good in that deck, since it doesn't have, what's it called anymore?
Bygone Bishop.
No. The 3 mana white pump non-tokens.
Well, no one was playing that in that deck. I mean,
but they were playing it in the board, right? So that if they could board it in against mono red.
No, I don't think they were.
With their Glorybound Initiate, were they not?
No, they were not.
No,
they were
just, no one was playing. I was watching.
Somebody did that to me at GP Denver.
Hmm. Well,
yeah, you just had too many tokens, I think.
For it to be
like really, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one, but again, my actual knowledge of every list is a little bit limited because, you know, I mostly just played with mine.
What about you, Mason? What was your biggest surprise?
Well, besides vampires, obviously, it was the blue white Godfarer's Gift deck, the ones that forgo Gate to the Afterlife in order to just play Refurbish. And be kind of more in on that play and be less, have less creatures and just do that stuff that Pascal Maynard piloted to second place. The deck was a really interesting take, especially since I think I had seen it a little bit somewhere else, like maybe a day or two before the PT, and kind of just wrote it off. And then
I think it top 4'd an online PTQ.
Okay, that might be
what I saw. Including 9-0-ing the Swiss, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely interesting. It's something I'm looking at for the future. But yeah, it was. I don't know. What do you guys feel about that deck?
I like the quality of cantrips you get to play. Like, compared to the gate versions, Chart of Course is really, really good. Strategic Planning is totally fine. Opt is fine. Search for Azcanta is pretty good in that deck. I just feel like the density of cantrips you get to play when you don't have to play, like, 30 creatures really, really goes up, and your ability to actually set up quick refurbishes is
just the main deck looks super solid, right? Like, 4 chart, 4 strategic, 2 opt, 2 search, a couple of cast outs, 22 lands, every other card you would think is in the deck, right?
Yeah, I feel like in general it's maybe a little bit removal light, and I think you saw that when Pascal was playing Seth. But there were definitely times where he, like, especially in the pre-board games, where he really wished he could break up some of Seth's synergies a little bit easier.
Yeah, what in Fumigate in the 75 is a little bit surprising to me. I think that you might be able to shave a gift and play another Fumigate personally. But I don't know, I could be a crazy person.
Maybe. I think you're locked into 4 gift for refurbish, but I think you could maybe change the creature suite a little bit depending on how things shape up here.
I mean, you could play no Sacred Tats. That would be powerful.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they wanted that for the mono-red matchup, but it's possible that you end up being able to play even just, like, main deck Fairgrounds Wardens or something a little bit less crappy. Again, because, like, I'm sure that was good against the really aggressive decks, but it looked poor against Seth in the final, where he needed to be able to break up some of the synergies a little bit better. Like, the game that he lost to, like, double Winding Constrictor plus Walking Ballista, just, like, 4 mana put a counter on it, 4 mana put a counter on it. Those are the kind of games you can't lose. Because that's not really that good from Seth's side.
Why do you think that Seth played a different list than his teammates?
What were the differences? Do you know offhand?
Yeah, so he's only playing the 3 Hostage Taker, which I like, and he's playing Vraska's Contempt, and Brad and Corey did not.
So they're playing 1 more Hostage Taker and no Vraska's Contempt?
Yeah, and he's also playing 1 less Walking Ballista. So he's a lot closer to my list that I posted in our group like 2 weeks ago. In fact, he might literally be the same list in the main deck. Oh no, he's playing 1 less land. So
I think.
Oh yeah, 1 less land, 1 less land, 1 more Blossoming Defense than the list that I posted for our Constructor Critics a few weeks ago, and they're playing 4 Fatal Push, 4 Blossoming, and all of the Hostage Takers, and all of the Walking Ballistas.
So my guess is that he just wanted a little bit less of a linear game plan. My thought is that otherwise you probably need some Vraska's Contempt in the sideboard, so it probably gives them some sideboard slots.
They do have the 2 Vraska's Contempt in the sideboard.
Yeah, so my guess is that he wanted to play some other sideboard cards, and that a lot of the time the Hostage Taker and Vraska's Contempt end up sort of, and Walking Ballista end up sort of filling similar roles. It's like 4 mana, kill something, gain some life.
They
right?
were. It looks like they were. Let's see if we can find out.
I'm not that concerned about exactly what he wanted in the sideboard as much as just that he felt that all 3 of those cards essentially ended up doing the same thing in slightly different ways.
Yep,
right. Yeah. So if he felt like that gave him more sideboard slots, that can be really valuable.
Yeah. I mean,
depending on what you felt like you needed.
It seems like he very much knew what he wanted to, because it was an Appetite for the Unnatural and a 3rd Death Gorge Scavenger.
Yeah. So he probably had 1 matchup. Probably, like, if they tested I would assume the God Pharaoh's Gift matchup was not good for them. Despite him beating Pascal in the final, I doubt he would consider that matchup favorable. And my guess is he wanted to have a little bit more for that matchup. Vraska's Contempt is also just probably slightly better than Walking Ballista, especially in that matchup.
Yeah, well,
so let's talk
about the deck doctor here, because we had accidentally skipped over it earlier because of technical issues, and it is a bug deck, so we're going to work on it at the end of the show, but since we're talking about bug decks right now, let's move right into it. And as I pull it up here on screen, and Michael, well, for some reason, you two aren't popping up on screen with it. That's weird.
That's okay.
That's fine. That's just fine. Just me. It's good.
You can just listen.
Yep. So, Michael, do you want to read off the deck list, everyone?
Yeah. So it's 4 Aether Hub, 4 Blooming Marsh, 4 Botanical Sanctum, 4 Forests, 2 Fetid Pools, an Island, and 2 Swamps, 4 Fatal Push, 4 Attunement Aether, 3 Blossoming Defense, 2 Vraska's Contempts, 4 Winding Constrictor, 4 Siphoner, 4 Cub, 2 Rishkar, 4 Rogue Refiner, 2 Hostage Taker, a Scarab God, 3 Walking Ballista, and 2 Sky Sovereigns. And the sideboard is 2 Scavenger, 2 Duress, 2 Confiscation Coup, a River's Rebuke, a Scarab God, 2 Vraska, an Appetite, 2 Negate, and 2 Bestiary.
Awesome. So what do we like about this list?
Oh, man.
And we should post off. They also wanted it to be known that they posted this before the PT. So now that we've got that out of the way, let's continue.
So first of all, this is my favorite deck on Standard right now. For those who have been following me, You guys know that. Like if you're a constructor critic, you know this is like basically the archetype that I've been testing for weeks. I love this list, and I think that there might only be two cards that I would change in the main deck. I don't like the Sky Sovereigns. I would make it a main deck Vraska and a main deck Green Gear Hulk. I think that the main deck outside of that is exactly where I'm at right now.
Yeah, I'm curious how this deck does moving forward. I feel like it was a really good choice for this weekend, but I think it's a little bit soft if decks start playing more Fumigates or Spot Removal. Specifically this list with only two Duresses and two Negates as sideboard cards. And I feel like
this might work
for now, but I think you need a lot more than that going forward.
I do too. I think you need six of those effects in the sideboard. I really don't like Lifecrafter's Bestiary in these decks. I think that you're going wide enough and can win games in different ways and don't need Lifecraft's Bestiary. One thing that I'm considering is the two mana make my guys indestructible.
Heroic Intervention.
Yeah.
I really think that more Duresses and Negates are a better... Oh,
yes. I think you need six of those to start with.
Yeah. I just think that this deck, almost no matter what sideboard cards you play, is just sort of fundamentally weak to sweepers.
Especially when you consider, like, that this deck is the Rogue Refiner Rishkar version. Like, meaning, like, there are just turns where you're not going to be able to leave up the mana that you want to leave up.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to hold up Negate and apply pressure to the board. I firmly believe that if deck lists weren't public, I don't believe that Seth would likely have been able to beat Jeskai Approach. I think the Jeskai Approach player relied a lot on the surprise factor of four settle no Fumigates in the Swiss, but that likely really came back to bite him in the top eight.
Seth definitely played around them at multiple points.
Right, where, like, it was just free because he knew, but had it been, like, a 2-2 split or a 3-1 split even, I think that matchup would have been substantially harder for him. I also think that this deck preys a lot on Teemer just not having enough spot removal.
A Braid.
Yeah, but, I mean, just, like, not playing against a ton of Fatal Push. Like, most decks are playing... So this deck is playing four Fatal Push and two Vraska's Contempt. Teemer is playing, usually, like, two Magma Spray and four Harnessed Lightning. But, like, the deck I played this weekend had 10 spot removal spells and three main deck Gontis, and I played this deck multiple times, and none of the games were especially close.
Yep. I think
I basically just think it's hard to rely on creature synergies when people are preparing for that specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But if you catch people unaware with this style of deck, it's really hard for them to beat you because they're so bad at removing your creatures that work well together that, like, even though Teemer plays a lot of really good cards, you're just getting so much more mileage out of your two drops because they work so well in tandem.
Yeah.
Aren't you playing, like, you played, like, basically, you know, this, like, you just cut the synergies, right? Like, you just cut Rishkar and Winding Constrictor, right?
Oh, sorry.
And Winding Constrictor, and then the Walking Ballistas as well, and then there are more Scarab Gods, and right.
And so you cut the synergies,
removal in every single spot, basically.
And Servant of the Conduit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you need him to make your mana work.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I think is a fundamental flaw that people think when they're building decks is they think that vehicles make you better against Wrath effects, and I don't find that to be true. While that is true from, like, a hyper aggressive deck, that's not true of your mid range decks. I find
it's because true. Just with this deck specifically, I'm scared because there aren't enough 3-power creatures.
Yeah, I was right. Say, I don't like boats in the deck.
You play Glintsleeve Siphoner as your top deck, right? You top deck Glintsleeve Siphoner, you play it, you still can't crew that ship.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah. Right.
Whereas when you were playing these aggro decks last year, right? A Planeswalker or almost any of the creatures, if not almost, I think maybe all of them, but...
Thraven Inspector, which was
a redraw, and then, like, it's just kind of awkward because we kind of think that in our heads when we're deck building, but I don't think that that's true in this deck.
I agree with that completely. And I also think that a lot of your creatures, like, how much do you really, like, so a Long Tusk Cub can be 3 power, but a lot of the time you're not upgrading it by that much, making it into a Sky Sovereign.
Mm-hmm. Would you almost like to see,
Not all of your creatures, you're, how much are you really upgrading a Scarab God by turning into a Sky Sovereign? Right. I mean, a little bit, but not substantially.
I'd almost rather see, like, a Verdurous Gearhulk or, like, another powerful 5-drop that fits the strategy than the Skyboat. It does just seem really awkward with how it plays out. I don't know if Verdurous Gearhulk's the right pick, but it's a card that comes to mind.
Yeah, I guess I'm just ultimately not really sure why, like, what matchups we're trying to fix with Sky Sovereign. Because I think this deck is already quite good against Teemer. I think Blossoming Defense against a deck with only 4 removal spells, 4 to 6 removal spells typically, is very powerful. Teemer's also really bad at dealing with Glintsleeve Siphoner.
Yeah.
That card is very powerful in that matchup. I'm not a huge fan of the Sky Sovereigns, and I think that then the sideboard likely needs some work too.
Yeah, speaking of which, yeah. Is the Scarab God on the board something that you guys are on board with? Because I'm not really sure why it's there.
So I don't like it personally. I don't think that you need help in the matchups that you would bring in Scarab God. I think that your deck is usually built to beat up on those decks. I think that if you take our advice and, you know, remove the Sky Sovereigns, you know, it opens up a lot of sideboard slots, right? And if you remove the Lifecrest Bestiaries, make them the cards that are what we talked about also. You know, between a one of Rivers Rebuke, you can remove that Scarab God, make it into maybe like a Nissa or something like that. You're going to find, I think that might help you a lot, just in those. Especially considering, like, in the matchups that you would want Scarab God, it's just a bad Confiscation coup anyway, and you already have two of those in your board.
I actually don't think Scarab God is actually even very good in the main deck of this deck.
I like it as a one of.
I get that it's a generically powerful card, but I think this is one of the worst Scarab God decks. That doesn't necessarily mean that you should play 0, but I think if you're expecting to be impressed by Scarab God in this shell, I'm almost certain you will not like it that well.
Yeah.
I quickly cut mine down to 2 as well. One is...
Yeah, I remember testing this... decks like this and feeling like... Because I think we started with like 3... and it was just too many. Like, we kept playing them in games where there were no creatures in graveyards. Because we'd have, like, Blossoming Defense, the only removal spell on our own guy, and we only had, like, you know, 4 fatal pushes of our own. So, you weren't ending up in these long, grindy games with 8 creatures in your graveyard.
Yep. Agree. Well, thank you so much for that Deck Doctor submission. We're going to go back to our regularly scheduled program now, but, you know, I like the idea behind that list, and I'm curious to see how those decks perform in the coming weeks. It's going to be very interesting. All right, so let's get back to our program here. So what card do you guys think really came out and put in work besides Attune with Aether? That's my personal spin on it there. Attune with Aether is probably the most...
But I can just repeat my answer from literally a year ago, right?
Yes, yeah. So when I was going through and setting up the notes for tonight, Spencer tagged me in a past doc so I would have like a frame of reference. And it was like, what card do you think like did the most work this Pro Tour? Were like really command force, and Spencer's was Attune with Aether. So it's been a year, still just putting out force every Pro Tour it's in. I'm curious to know how well it's done in every Pro Tour, the last 5 Sam Pro Tours it's been in. That'd be an interesting fact to know, because I bet it's done really, really well.
Can I say Slice and Twain? Is that allowed? Like, sure. What is this card doing in people's set? Like,
wait. So this is things that came out and put in work, or things you don't expect to.
No, it was came out and put in work. Just like they just did work.
Okay.
That's what you had. And so I excluded a 2 and 3 there.
So not Slice and Twain. Specifically, everything but Slice and Twain.
Yes, that would be the cards that really didn't.
But it was in so many lists.
Okay, so this is kind of a weird answer because I think it's been great in other formats. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Fatal Push is a lot better in Standard right now than it has been at any point in its history. The density of mono red vehicles and Teemer, like killing Long Tusk Cubs, but then also this Whining Constrictor deck. Fatal Push was consistent. Like, I ended up playing 4 Fatal Pushes in the 4 color deck, and it was consistently insane.
Yeah, this is something that I talked about in the Constructed Critics group. If you're a patron of $5 or more, you get access to that. I kind of wrote up a report of like the decks that I'm considering for Portland, and like Fatal Push is a huge, huge draw to, like, because if you can't kill a Long Tusk Cub right now, like, you're
you
bad
just
against
die.
Everyone.
You
and
just,
you just die.
Or a Glintsleeve Siphoner or a Whining Constrictor,
yeah,
or whatever. And, like, we've had formats in the past where it hasn't been the two CM. Like, you've really felt the inability to push Rogue Refiner or Whirler or whatever. But because we're playing it a lot in these slower decks now rather than, like, in the hyper-aggressive decks, it actually, even when you're not able to turn on Revolt, it just allows you to break serve on the draw.
Yeah.
Yep.
Makes a lot of sense. Spencer, what card came out for you?
Slicense, wait, no.
It came out of your sideboard.
Yeah. I was legitimately like, did he just cast that?
Yeah, people have been doing that in Teemer for a while, but that card seems so bad.
It's just, like, I just feel like you're dead by the time you get, anyway, it's fine. I think that the card that probably, like, really put in work compared to what I expected was honestly Nissa Steward of Elements. There were just so many free things cast off that card this weekend that I just legitimately did not expect. Like, I legitimately cannot believe how good that card looked on camera. Because I've played a lot of that card now, and it's never been that good for me. And clearly I'm doing something wrong.
Yeah, I found that card to be, like, good in the Teemer Mirrors when you're on the play, for example. That's
so
just, like,
for what it's worth, it also gets better with Fatal Pushes in your deck list. And a lot of the decks that were playing it had Fatal Push. Like, any of the Sultai decks that played copies.
Like
if you actually have a one
mana Fatal Push up, and then all of a sudden, like, it's like casting things the next turn.
Right. If you just can actually protect it, and Fatal Push contributes to that just because of its mana efficiency, it's really, really hard to beat.
Yeah, definitely. It smooths out your draws and starts drawing your free cards. Very powerful card.
I mean, you don't need to draw more than, like, if you draw, like, two free cards and scry once, and your opponent has to, like, Vraska's Contempt it, you're so far ahead on that exchange.
So, Mason, I'm really interested by your answer, because this is something that I saw a lot on Twitter. And I am, like, at a firm disagreement on this card.
Oh, interesting. So I put down Rogue Refiner, and the reason is Rogue Refiner has obviously been done work in the Teemer, the four-color Teemer decks, but, you know, we saw it show up in some Sultai lists, we saw it show up in the Jabberwocky list. It's just a card that it does its job very well, and it just puts in work every time you play it. You know, you play it, you get another card deeper, you move towards stuff, you get a little energy, and it can normally trade off for another card fairly easily. So, I mean, I'm curious, why do you not like Rogue Refiner?
Yeah, I have been thoroughly unimpressed with this card in testing recently. It just never, it never feels correct to play it when I have other options.
Well, what cards are you playing it with? Because that's kind of a thing. Because, like, when I'm playing Teemer, like, I play Teemer Black, for example, and, like, I play it and I use it as, like, a curve filler. Like, it's my three drop, it sets up for a Hydra or a Chandra.
So you have the option, right, to play that or Whirler or another Long Tusk Cub, you know, or leave up a removal spell. Like, what do you prefer to play?
Well, so, personally, if you're on the play, you want to play Rogue Refiner, right? Like,
if I can give input,
yeah.
A lot of the time, what I would use Rogue Refiner for is when I thought my opponent was holding up removal, and I wouldn't be able to, like, make as many tokens as I wanted off the Whirler.
Sure. Yes.
I would play the Refiner to be energy filler, so that when I played the Whirler, I would already have six, something like that.
Yeah.
And then it's just really good in the late game, just because it's a redraw and a body.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
I'm not saying the card is bad or that you should cut it from your deck. Just people were, like, talking about banning it on Twitter, and
well,
I was like,
"That's
what
absurd.
Is happening?
Nothing should be banned." And
people just like to talk about banning things.
If you want to get a hot,
I think the only
thing you could ban is a tune to kill the deck. By the way,
but you can't. God,
but no, I'm not saying you should. I'm not saying you should.
If you actually ban Lay of the Land, you should just stop
making magic cards, because clearly
it's embarrassing.
I'm in full agreement with you. I don't even want to have the band talk. I know I'm gonna have to listen to it all week on other podcasts, but
you know what also really, really surprised me is this Michael Heinderarker only playing three Harness Lightnings. What do you think the reason for that was, Mason?
Well, some people, you know, they're in a scramble the night before the Pro Tour. They don't really know what to do, and they might misregister their deck list and submit it, not realize it till the next day.
You want to know the actual reason?
Do you think you know that Michael Honderocker dude did? I mean, if you think you know, then sure.
Because it's the worst removal spell in the deck by a substantial margin.
Okay.
Well, we'll have to ask Michael.
Hot take. Harness Light is the worst removal spell in that deck by a substantial margin.
No, but seriously, so you play Wrath's Contempt, Fatal Push, and so you just don't have a lot of energy producers. Like, I haven't looked at your deck list since.
No, I mean, it's mostly just that you need Fatal Push to, like, to break serve, and Wrath's Contempt is maybe the best card in the deck straight up.
Okay.
Like, I would consider trying to play four in the main deck. That card is really, really good. I'm telling you, when your opponent spends the whole game trying to play a Hazoret and finally plays it and then attacks you with it, and you're just like, okay, exile it, I'll gain two life. The game is done.
I believe that.
Harness Lightning is a fine spell, but Fatal Push is way better for curve filler. It allows you to sneak tap lands in there without it feeling like as much of a cost, and Vraska's Contempt sort of serves a different role. So Harness Lightning is like Fatal Push 5 through 7, and then Vraska's Contempt is like your nice Scarab God. It's my turn to have the Scarab God get that out of here.
Well, we'll have to ask Michael Heinderiker what he thinks on another episode.
Okay, yeah, definitely. That's interesting. Okay. Well, let's move on to what's with the next card here? I moved on my notes trying to find Michael's list here. Oh, here we go. What saw a play that you don't expect to keep seeing play going forward? And I'll start with this one. I don't think the Mono White Vampire deck is probably going to... I mean, like, you're going to see play because it's like, it's the Mono White Vampire deck. Oh my gosh, it's so cool.
Because you get to play four Legion Conquistadors in Standard, and there's just something great about that.
It's basically Cobblade 2.0, but, you know... Yeah, that's the real reason why. But no, I don't think that deck is probably going to stand the test of time. I don't know if that's something like, maybe that's a hot take, but I don't think that deck is doing enough powerful things to actually be a real deck in this standard format. Spencer, you're kind of like dancing your head. As someone that said you should be embarrassed to play Thraben Inspector, how do you feel about this Mono White Vampire deck playing Legion Conquistador?
So I have been known to play my fair share of Mono White silly aggro decks for funsies, and there is this. I think this deck is good, man.
I'm going to GP Atlanta next weekend. So you think that like in day two, I'm gonna like walk? I'm gonna be walking around between my rounds, and I'm going to like. See people playing the Mono White Vampire deck, like multiple people.
It had 100% conversion.
All right, it was five people, Michael. It was five.
Five out of five.
All right, five out of five. But didn't they all like 3-0 and 2-1 limited? Like that's what I had heard.
I don't know their lives.
I want to know their constructed ratings.
What I do know is, I think that if you held a gun to my head and say, Spencer, you're going to play a match for your life against Teemer right now, and you have to pick between Mardu Vehicles and Mono White Vampires, I'm probably picking Mono White Vampires.
What do you want me to tell your kid when he's older?
Daddy
loved Legion Conquistador too much.
Your dad didn't know how to use Legion Conquistador. He kept searching up one. And then he draw the other one for turn.
Hashtag awkward moment.
All right. Well, I am not a huge Marty fan. I will say I am a huge Sam, I can't pronounce his last name, fan. I liked how he was like very open and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But that's a different topic for a different day. Michael, what do you... I mean, like, you were there, obviously, so it's different. You don't have the time, probably, to go over everything. You've been busy, but...
Yeah, I haven't a chance to really...
It has to be Green-White Cats, right?
Well, okay. I mean, that guy smashed the crap out of me and then lost his last two, so I was kind of salty about that. But I think the Sultai deck will slip a little bit. I think that... The whole whining. I think that like that deck is really powerful when people aren't playing a lot of removal spells, but it has typically gotten a little bit worse, especially now that you don't have a planeswalker that you get to main deck against just spot removal.
Do you think,
that being
like
said,
four...
I
oh, sorry, continue.
That being said, I still expect it to be good. I mean, when we're talking about slipping, you know, slipping from winning the Pro Tour can still be, really, you know, I'm not saying the deck is bad.
Yeah, and that's definitely
it's a lofty standard, right? Like, yeah, you just won the Pro Tour, and the deck generally performed pretty well. You know, slipping from there is.
Can I get on a soapbox for a second, Mason?
I think I know where this is going, so sure. Take your soapbox.
Like, we all know, if you look at the first two pages of top decks, that there's zero tokens list on there, right?
Yep.
Yes. There's literally zero. Zero tokens decks. Zero. Had enough wins to make it on the first two pages. Zero. Stop playing this deck. It is not good. There we go.
So this was sort of, that was a deck that Danny ended up playing that I strongly considered. And ultimately, my fear is just always with that deck that if someone decides they're going to beat you, there's nothing you can really do about it. Like, if someone is a psychopath and, you know, decides to register multiple Rivers Rebukes in their sideboard, like BBD, they're, like, it's just bad times for you. And there's not really much you can do.
Yeah. I don't know if I would go as far to say stop playing that deck. I played a lot of tokens last format, and I have not played any tokens this format. That being said, I still think it is probably a reasonable choice. It's just, like Michael said, if someone wants to beat you, or, you know, your draw doesn't come together quite that well, you will just die. So that is definitely a negative to the deck. What I was going to ask Michael about the Sultai deck, though, is I was going to say, do you think the four Blossoming defense, like committing to that four, was a big edge for Seth of the PT? Because I've seen a lot of lists with three and two and stuff like that, but having the full four.
I know that a lot of the, like, original SCG lists, which, you know, this looks like it's pretty close to, were playing the full four. I think they were all playing the full four. And I feel like when your opponent only has, like, basically four Harness Lightnings and, like, a couple of Glory Bringers, and maybe they can Magma Spray your cup once, they kind of get one shot at breaking up your synergies. It sort of reminds me of this limited format in a way, like, where a lot of the time your opponent will, like, enchant some creature, and you basically get one chance to kill it or you're going to die to it. And that's sort of how these guys are. So, like, I really like maxing Blossoming Defense because I feel like in a lot of games, your opponent has one shot to break up your synergy, and if they can't do it, it's going to run them over.
It's very fair.
I feel like, ultimately, Blossoming Defense is just one of the most powerful cards. It's also just insane in the aggro matchups. Mm-hmm. If your opponent is playing, like, Oncrop Crasher or Unlicensed Disintegration or needs to Earthshaker Kenra you to get max damage, whatever it may be, I think Blossoming Defense is really powerful as long as you don't expect to play a ton of control matchups where maybe you can flood on that kind of effect in the face of sweepers.
Very reasonable. So, we've gone over that kind of stuff. And I just want to say before we move on that I really like this standard format. I think the games are a lot of fun. They're very interesting. They're very interactive. I have had a blast playing this standard format. It's one of my favorite standard formats I've played. It's not up to the greatest yet in my mind, but I've really enjoyed it, and, you know, if the game's really fun, I'm okay with energy. Energy-style decks being everywhere, I think that's cool, and all that really matters to me is the game's being fun. And there are definitely games that are very not fun with the best decks last couple formats, so it's nice to have a fun format where you interact with your opponent and get to do all that kind of stuff.
Isn't this literally the same format as last time without Gideon?
Last
that sounds like a major improvement.
It's the format that we loved, except we like got rid of the card that everybody hated.
Yeah, like, Gideon sucks.
Yeah, this format this format's great. Is there people that saying that they don't like it that actually play it?
I don't know if they actually play it, but there are definitely people that don't like it, and there are definitely people that are talking about, oh my gosh, it's 51% of its energy, but people
really
just love
hate-
to complain.
Attune with Aether. People like have an irrational hate of that card. I think that Attune with Aether in combination with that many fast lands actually makes for a lot of really fascinating sequencing decisions in the early game.
I do too. Can I just say, Mason, you gotta cut down on your podcasts, man.
Like, yeah, you gotta cut down.
You listen to too many podcasts.
I don't know. I look around and I see things too, but I mean, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm just in the wrong corners of the internet. Maybe that's just that. Who knows?
Yeah, you gotta follow people and do things with people that uplift you, man. That's on.
Alternatively, just don't use your social media.
Spencer, are you saying not to hang out with you because you put me down for pineapple pizza all the time?
That my listeners put you down for a pineapple pizza. I say nothing.
Okay. Oh, I didn't shoot the gun.
I don't know that
I just ordered the guy. Yeah. So yes, Michael's in the chat. He knows where it's like. I'm like, hey, I want Skype whenever you guys are ready, and then you're like, you're so needy. Calm down, Mason. Maybe that happened like an hour ago. Who knows?
I feel like you're cyberbullying me right now, Mason.
I feel like
now
I'm
we know how Austin feels. Yep. Austin retaliating.
Yep, this is how I feel all the time. Yep. Well, guys, I think that was some good talk. This PT really was. It was a lot of fun to watch. The games are fun. I'm super excited for the GPs that are coming up and to play the rest of this format with the cyclical nature of it. It's super awesome. We're gonna see a lot of cool cyborg cards and stuff like that. And that's all I can really ask for a standard format. So, thank you so much for talking about all that kind of stuff. If you want to find Spencer, you can find him at Spencer13H on Twitter, and you can find him on Modo at Spencer13Dev, right?
Yeah, but if you're on MTG Arena, it is Spencer13H.
Ooh, those brags! Oh my gosh. Whew. Michael, do you need a Tylenol? You getting a little sick over there? Spencer's bragging pretty hard there. All right, and so if you want to find Michael, you find him at MagicMikeMTG on Twitter.
Wait. What? What was the... I got really confused.
Yeah, he got into the beta is what he was saying.
Yeah. But why do I need a... I need a towel?
You need a Tylenol. Because those are some sick brags. You might get caught a cold.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah.
You're good. It's all right. It's all right, man.
Okay. Sorry. I thought you said it. I was confused why I would need a towel. You're... Okay.
Well... I don't know, man. Maybe take a shower or something. You need a towel.
You're good. I just was confused.
That's good. It's fine. And you can find both these guys on the Constructed Criticism Facebook group, on the Constructed Criticism family on Facebook. They'll be happy to talk to you. You can also find them on the Constructed Critics if you're a Patreon. And you can find...
Patron of $5 or more.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. My bad. Patron of $5 or more. I'm sorry. Spencer, I'm not as good as this as you. I'm a merely bronze pro when it comes to hosting.
Lack of natural talent.
I am definitely not a platinum pro when it comes to podcasts.
Well, when it comes to your podcast outro, I guarantee you, you're a platinum pro. And I think you're the only platinum pro. You're the Finkel of the CCMTG outro. True or false? Hall of Fame? Yeah, Michael agrees. That's 2/3. So humble as the only platinum pro. But no, but seriously, you can find those guys there. And if you're a patron of $5 or more, you can join the Constructed Critics group. Always try to get conversation going there. Michael and Spencer are really quick to comment something helpful, and I'm really quick to post a GIF. So you can find us all there. And you can always see support the guys with the Patreon. The show will always be free, but we do appreciate the money. And we thank Oasis Games and Fusion Gamings. Yeah, well, listen, Spencer, I stumbled. Don't laugh at me. I don't need
to. I like that we appreciate the money. Yeah. I thought that was great.
It's like, that's just
the show
right?
will always be free. It's just like cold hard facts. Yeah. The show will always be free, but if you want to hand us some dollars,
I mean, if you feel the show has given you enough value that you want to give a dollar or something for a month, even just 1 month, it means a lot.
There was a player at the GP that kind of was talking to Danny, Michael, and I. He listens to both shows, and I'm the worst. I usually write down listeners' names when I go to GPs, and I didn't this time, and I'm so sorry. But this guy, you can look it up. He crushed Danny, so just look at Danny's round. Three opponent, that was the guy.
Yeah, use MTG Low Project, and then compare me versus Danny.
Oh!
Wow.
But he says, when I finally cash the GP, I'm going to become a patron of the show because you guys have given so much to me that I want to give back once that happens. And I think that's really cool. Like, if that's like the kind of value that you're looking for and you feel like we're helping you get there, like, we really appreciate that. That means the world.
Yeah. And I mean, and it helps with other shows too that might be coming to the network, Spencer knows. I was going to let you say it. It's your network. I was going to let you do it, even though I think it's awesome. But I want you to talk about it. You know all the details.
Yeah. So we are adding, I talked about it a little bit last week. I didn't want to announce it until it was final. But we are adding, oh my gosh, my head hurts right now. Proven Combatants to the network. Just a show from some very highly qualified ladies that are, just coming to you know, make Magic better. And that's kind of what this network is all about, is always improving. And we think that they're going to be a great addition. So,
yeah, really happy to have them join the Heezy Gaming family.
Somebody said, who said that earlier? I smiled. I didn't know they were part of the Heezy family. I was like, oh man, I leaned in a little too hard. Like, when somebody gives you a nickname you don't like, you lean in a little bit so they don't call you it.
Yeah.
But I think I might have leaned in too hard, and now it's...
You think naming your LLC after it might be too hard, or do you think it's too hard? Like, do you want
to... No, the problem was that it already had stuck before then. It was just too late.
I could see that. Well, that moves us to hashtag would that be good. Hashtag would that be good is our Twitter outreach program. If you tweet it, Spencer will read it.
Whoa.
No.
We've been over this before. Well, that's not how this works.
That's totally how it works. It is. I'm not pulling it up on my phone right now because Twitter has a great computer client, and I would totally use that client.
Andrew Elliott says, what's the best modern playable card to come out of Ixalan? My vote is Unclaimed Territory. Honorable mention for Search to Ask Kanta. Hashtag, would that be good?
I think I said, so not counting the land and like recent memory, Kite Self Rebooter, really, like, I think that plus the land obviously helped put the human stack up on there because they have another 2-drop that's disruptive that they got to play.
Yeah.
What do you think?
That seems reasonable. I don't know. It's kind of depressing that those are the best things to come out of a set, but, you know, here we are.
We're modern, right? We're talking about modern. Let's see here. So Spell Pierce is great.
Nope.
So there. Well, I think that there's no way this is correct, right? Like, this has, like, it has to be not even close. The Green Merfolk, right? Like, they have top eights in the last 2 SCGs in modern.
Interesting. We'll have to try that deck. Is that deck good?
I've been playing it. It's really fun. You know, being able
that
to.
That sounds like a no.
That's a secret, by the way. If your friends say a card's sweet or something like that, it means it's not good.
No, I actually think that deck is good.
Okay.
Like, okay. So between, like, Kumena Speaker, Merfolk Branchwalker, and then the... what is the 3-mana that makes things cost more?
The bad Cure the Glass Spinner.
Copala. Yeah.
No, I think she's better.
Well, you can at least split them.
Yeah.
I mean, if you would play multiples, you can definitely split them.
No, because it gets pumped.
Right, that doesn't matter. But that's not why you play those cards. You play those cards to protect your things, right? And it forces them to have 2 spells.
They still have to have 2 spells.
That's not... What? They just pay mana. What do you mean? So if you play Kupala, right? And you have a Fatal Push in hand.
Well, which ones are in the top 8 deck lists right now, Mason?
I think both are.
Not in the main.
Okay, well, you know, decks top 8 all the time and they're wrong. According to Spencer, you should be embarrassed to play Thraven Spectre. I think you should be embarrassed to play Kupala over Kira. Kira's just better at that role.
Kupala, whatever.
Yeah.
All right.
Kira,
all right. Whatever.
And
both Merfolk, whatever.
My answer is the Merfolk. I think that that's the answer to this question.
Kite Self Rebooter. Collins Mullins. And he's on his podcast. He's counting it. He loves it. All right.
Well, what podcast is he on?
Let me double check the name real quick, but I believe it's the MTG Grinders is his podcast that he does with his friend. Let me double check.
Oh, it's like him and Rudy and...
No, it's not Rudy.
MTG
Grindcast. MTG Grindcast.
Yeah, MTG Grinders is Rudy and Ken and Grace.
It's not Rudy
and
though.
Oh, it's not MTG, that one. Yeah, I know.
It's MTG Grindcast. So
those just sound too similar. One of them should sue the other one.
Definitely. It should be Collins because his is better. All right, on to the next one.
Shots fired.
It's just true.
I don't think you're allowed to host anymore.
That guy has been on a tear lately. He has some really good results.
Yeah, I mean, also, it's his preference, right? Like, some people like the Goldfish podcast, and, you know, whatever. All right.
Oh, my gosh, Mason!
Right, I'm just joking around. All right, what's the next hashtag? Would that be good?
Part 1 of 3 to celebrate Pro Tour Ixalan has gone live. Alex Kirby tweets, and I believe it is the Friday Finance.
Yeah, Unconstructed Criticism. You should definitely check it out. He's also got a Patreon. He wants to move into video content, things like that. We are glad to give him a platform, and you should definitely check out Friday Finance on ConstructedCriticism.com.
Most definitely. Very well written. I think he just put the last one, too. for that series.
Yeah, I think there's another one. Adrian tweets, went 2-1 with this pile, hashtag dino, hashtag would that be good. This deck has a lot of 2-drops, triple Tilanali's Knight, triple Fathom Fleet Firebrand, Merfolk Branchwalker Drover, Deeproot Warrior. He's playing a Cobbled Wings, so that's not good. But Quad Thrash... Kind of. Quad Thrash of Raptors seems good. Captivating Crew seems good. This deck is awkward, but it's not... It's powerful. Like, the fact that... Generally, if you end up with triple Fathom Fleet Firebrand, Quad Thrash of Raptors, I mean, you're in the right color. I can tell you that.
I finally
I'm gonna say that. That's true. This deck is kind of playing too many 6-drops for me.
More than zero?
No, I think that one Colossal Dreadmaw is often okay, but I don't know that I would play the second one in this deck.
Yeah. The filler in this deck is kind of sketchy. You have, like, double Frenzied Raptor, a Dual Shot, double Dreadmaw.
I like a Dual Shot in the main list format.
Maybe with this deck. I don't know. He has so many 2-drops.
The best PT Exelon, well, that's not how you spell PT Exelon, Andrew, moment was Marshall to Paul and LSV. You have 8 Protor top 8s between you. Can't stop laughing, LOL.
I'm assuming those are all LSVs.
They are LSV.
That's a dagger, but a good one.
He did that a couple of times. There was a moment where somebody asked, or maybe it was Rich, somebody asked Paul if he was the reason that Team Channel Fireball didn't have 6 Hall of Famers on it.
Yeah, you can make it for the Seagrass too for that.
I appreciate the daggers. That's good.
It's like,
it's just a good time.
Yeah.
To be fair, one of the most awkward moments from the last Pro Tour was when they're doing the LSV Paul moments, and they're asking questions from the other person, and the last question to Paul was from LSV. It was like, "What would your first Pro Tour top 8 have meant to you had you gotten one?" And Paul literally starts to cry.
I'm on the one with Michael in the last show, and he's laughing a lot of things that are really personal.
That's just funny. That's just funny. You can't dagger each other a little bit. What's the point?
That's a good point. Good point. All right, and I think the last one here is negates in the main deck of team or energy. Hashtag, would that be good?
Hey.
What?
You skipped.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me rewind here. Get ready, everyone. New podcast incoming with Combatant MTG. Hashtag would that be good? Hashtag always improving. That is the podcast I was talking about earlier with Chantel and Teresa Foe and all them. And very excited to have it on the network. It's going to be awesome.
I heard that Sarah, who is... So Alexander Hain is Sarah's boyfriend. I don't know how I'm supposed to say that. I'm supposed to reverse it because people, like, with women, they're really rude and they always be like, are you here with your boyfriend? But basically every time you see Alexander Hain now, you should be like, oh, are you Sarah's boyfriend? Like, are you here with Sarah? Like, anyway, it's funny. They talked about it on First Strike and I laughed, like, hysterically. But I hear that she's, like, insanely good at Magic. Some people say that she's better than Alex. So... definitely something to check out.
That's high praise. He's quite good.
And he's really good. And I hear she's been putting up awesome results. We've had Chantel on this podcast. I know Teresa was just at the last Pro Tour.
Yeah, she's good. I've had an encounter with her a couple times now.
Yeah.
We've crossed.
So, I don't know the fourth person on this cast. I've never heard of them before, but
she's from England, right?
Oh, is she the one that's from England?
I think she won the English National Championship.
Oh, like, awesome. There you go.
Or so.
Sounds like a stacked freaking podcast.
Yep, definitely. But let's go back to negates in the main deck of team energy. Hashtag would that be good?
No, I don't like this. So here's the thing: is the reason that teamer is so good is because it plays like mostly cards that are good in basically all reasonable matchups right now, and while negates are good and like can be used in a lot of matchups, there's not a purpose to put this in your main deck at this point.
Yeah, it's pretty bad in, like, a number of matchups. Specifically the Mirror. It's, like, really miserable. And I get, like, not wanting to play a bunch of stuff that leans really hard for the mirror, but negate is like too far the other direction when you're still playing the most popular deck, I think.
I board in negates on the play in the mirror.
So in the boarded games, things change a little bit, but I feel like in the main deck, there are way too many games where your opponent literally will not cast a spell you can counter with it.
Sure.
Yeah. It's interesting. I do not normally bring in negates in the mirror. But that's the show. Spencer, thank
you.
Whoa.
Skip our last segment.
Did I skip the last segment?
Yeah. Hashtag Michael, what'd you learn this week?
Oh my gosh, I'm the worst. That wasn't in the original show notes. I'm bad. Michael, what'd you learn this week?
I learned we're getting a new podcast, which I'm excited to listen to.
There you go. I learned that if you give Mason too much power, he'll call out other podcasts on the show that he doesn't like.
I never said I didn't like Rudy's podcast. Rudy's podcast is fine. It's quite good. It's just I like Colin's better. That's fine.
I just wanted to say that I had to do this with Manny all the time. Not everything said by Mason Clark is endorsed by constructive criticism.
That's 100% true, because I like pineapple on pizza.
Yeah, that's definitely not endorsed. But thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you guys all next week.
Thanks, guys.
Magic.